And it is 9 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 12 noon in the East Coast, and it's 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is October 10, 2016, and this is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio Studio One, we are going to talk about the Brexit, what we have left off before. We're going to commemorate the war of Yom Kippur, that happened in 1973, and exactly the holiday that we are about to celebrate in Israel and all over the Jewish household, I guess, in the world. Yom Kippur is a day to remember. It's a fasting day and very important, highest holiday, they call it, because that's when, you know, God is saying. Let's start with some memory from 1973 on Yom Kippur.
October 6th is, among other things, the anniversary of the outbreak of the Yom Kippur War, known in the Arab countries as the Ramadan War, a conflict that tells you virtually all that you need to know about the modern Middle East, starting with the fact that it was launched on Yom Kippur, the holiest day in the Jewish calendar. To Israel's neighbors, this isn't a moment to show a little respect, as Western powers will often say, well, perhaps we shouldn't bomb if we were engaged in conflict in an Arab country during Ramadan. It's, yahoo, let's catch them when they're in the synagogue and slaughter them all before they can fight back. The Arabs aren't shy about calling it the Ramadan War. Why should we be shy about military operations during Ramadan? It was also an attempt by the Arabs to get back some prestige, as well as killing all the Jews, because of the fact that they had lost in 1948. They tried to exterminate Israel as soon as it was created by UN resolution and suffered an ignominious defeat at the hands of vastly outnumbered and outgunned opponents. Then in 1967, they'd just been ready. We're going to get the Jews this time. We're going to kill them all. We're coming for you. And the Israelis launched a preemptive attack, which the Egyptians and Syrians apparently didn't expect, just because they threatened to wipe out Israel and order the UN peacekeepers out of the way. And in the Six-Day War that obviously humiliated the Arabs badly. So, the surprise attack went pretty well in October of 1973 for the first few days. But then the Egyptians were fought to a standstill, the Syrians were repulsed, the Israelis went on the offensive in Syria and badly humiliated the Syrians, which caused the Egyptians to panic. They thought, well, we better resume offensive operations. So they did, but of course, they got soundly thrashed. The Israelis drove into the Sinai under Ariel Sharon. And then there was a ceasefire. And the Arabs, oh, we don't want a ceasefire. We want to continue fighting. Things went from bad to worse, and eventually they were defeated. Though there was almost a Soviet-American confrontation that could have escalated to shooting before the whole thing was settled. And then you look at the military effort. It wasn't just Syria and Egypt. A bunch of other Arab countries were involved. There were troops from Algeria, from Saudi Arabia, our buddies. They showed up without any logistical plans. There were some from Iraq and other places. There were also Cuban troops involved, thousands of them. There were some Soviet forces were certainly up on the front lines. Some were killed. Some seemed to have been captured. There were even North Koreans, the incredible band of knaves on the side of the Arabs. And both the Egyptians and the Syrians committed atrocities. The Syrian defense minister later said he'd personally given a medal to a Syrian soldier who'd killed prisoners with an axe and eaten some of their flesh. Yeah, that makes you feel good, doesn't it? That's how you want to remember a war. And the weird thing is, in both Syria and Egypt, the war is treated as a victory. We showed them, we got them back for the Six-Day War because we won the first little bit when we caught them by surprise. Sure, we lost eventually, but we're calling this a victory. There are memorials to it in both countries designed by North Korean artists. Yeah, you're doing great. And afterward, of course, it was the Israelis who, once again, having beaten their enemies, more or less sued for peace. The Egyptians finally decided they couldn't stand another defeat like that, so they agreed to make a very chilly peace with Israel, but none of their other neighbors have, even though they must understand by now, at least in their calmer moments, that Israel has nuclear weapons, and the consequence of defeating Israel in a conventional war would be the annihilation of their own military forces and much else besides. And that's the last point to bear in mind. Because Israel's a very small country. People act as though it were Goliath and its neighbors were David, but the reverse is true. You look at a map of the Middle East, you can barely find Israel. If you take out the West Bank, Israel is about as wide at its narrowest as, if you're Canadian, say Ottawa, from the 416 to Parliament Hill, certainly narrower than Toronto. That's the entire strategic reserve. And yet to this day, and this is the final classic thing, even looking at all this history, and looking at the geography, and looking at the fact that Israel is a democracy that respects the rights of all its citizens, including its Muslim citizens, whereas its neighbors don't respect anybody's rights, people still try to blame Israel for everything. It's not just a misunderstanding. It's something far more malevolent. If you can look at the Yom Kippur War and not tell who the good guys are in the Middle East, then you are intentionally placing yourself beyond the reach of reason. So that's why we need to remember the Yom Kippur War, because it tells us what's at stake in the Middle East, who the combatants are, and what it means not to be on the side of Israel. If you are enjoying these commentaries, please visit my website. That's johnrobson.ca. It helps support my documentaries, my writing, my commentary. And keep watching The Rebel. If you're not already a subscriber, please do subscribe.
All right, and we are back. We want to thank him because it was an excellent idea to just try to explain the story in a very friendly way and maybe a little not conventional, but the idea is that the war of 1973 was the creation of a very vicious idea. It wasn't a hero war, it was a coward war. Because when you come to the holiest day and you attack people, it's cowardice. So let's not talk about it anymore. I just want to explain that we all in the process of understanding and trying to get this world on a better side. And once we're doing it, sometimes we dismantle and sometimes we fix things. And we have a situation of England getting off Brexit. And, you know, it's all different, of course, from the craziness of the Middle East. God forbid they have any problem there. We are just saying this is more commercial thing. And we have some segment from last week that I want you to listen. Let's listen.
A British Prime Minister says the UK will forge a unique relationship with the European Union once it formally leaves the bloc.
There's no such thing as a choice between soft Brexit and hard Brexit. The line of argument in which soft Brexit amounts to some form of continued EU membership and hard Brexit is a conscious decision to reject trade with Europe is simply a false dichotomy. And it's one that is too often propagated by people who, I'm afraid to say, have still not accepted the result of the referendum. Because the truth is that too many people are letting their thinking about our future relationship with the EU be defined by the way the relationship has worked in the past.
Now, May was speaking during the first day of the Conservative Party annual conference. She said that Britain will leave the EU in accordance with established legal procedures. Prime Minister has also unveiled the British government's plan after its formal exit from the EU. She says a formal process will take place by the end of March of next year. And joining us out of Bristol is Mr. Tony Gosling, investigative journalist. Hello, Mr. Gosling, and thanks for joining us on Press TV's Top 5 once again, sir. Now, of course, the British Premier is making these promises of a unique, quote, relationship, you know, with the EU once out of the EU. But isn't it up to EU to make that distinction? I mean, is May being too optimistic here?
Well, look, our unelected prime minister, I remind people that nobody has elected Theresa May into that job, is really reflecting what I suppose Boris Johnson, who's now the foreign secretary, said, which was that the European Union was the same kind of vision as Hitler wanted for Europe. Looking at the power of the Hitler's corporations back in the war, Bayer, Siemens and Krupps are now some of the biggest, most powerful corporations in Europe. And I think there's a backstory to this exit, and that is that many people in the Conservative Party and elsewhere in Britain have woken up to what the European Union is really all about. Ambrose Pritchard-Evans spoke in The Telegraph, has written in The Telegraph, and explained the CIA created the EU back at the end of the Second World War because they didn't want to deal with all these different countries. They wanted one embassy that they could go to. So Theresa May has kind of laid it down. This is about regaining sovereignty from Brussels. And it's going to take a couple of years by spring 2019. But I think she's doing absolutely the right thing in making sure that's absolutely clear. There's no fudging this issue.
And what do you think the future of the UK is going, what do you think the future is going to hold, pardon me, for the UK once officially out of the EU?
Well, that's a good question. At least we'll be the masters of our own destiny. We keep hearing that many of the industries are going to be going out of Britain. The car industry, for example. Last week they were talking about Jaguar Land Rover and Nissan may have to leave Britain. Well, anyway, sorry, folks, but these are not British industries. They are actually owned by companies like Tata in India and, of course, by the Japanese. So the cars are made in Britain, but they're not British cars anymore. And so a lot of this is scaremongering, I think, from abroad. Yes, I think some industries will go, but then that, of course, will leave a labour force, a load of expertise here in Britain to start to rebuild its industrial base. That's what I'd like to see. The control of borders, though, is going to be, I think, absolutely crucial. And the Conservatives have decided that there's going to be no fudging that one at all. By the way, the migrant crisis we've seen, which has largely precipitated the vote for Brexit at the moment, is actually run by the mafia. And the reason that the European Union has not dealt with it is because the European Union would rather deal with the mafia than it would with the 500 million of us European people. That's one of the problems with the EU, and that's why I think it's going to fail. We've seen Hungary also today really sticking two fingers up at Brussels, as many other Europeans would do, the Italians, the French, and even the Germans, if they were given the chance. Luckily, Britain has had that chance, and it's been very decisive that we've said, no, we don't want to do business with Brussels anymore.
Thank you for your input, Mr. Gosling. That's Mr. Tony Gosling, investigative journalist, joining us out of Bristol.
All right, and we're back. It's Orly Benny Davis on BBS Radio with the Impossible Truth. It's the truth that the English have the right to depart from the European Union because it didn't really satisfy their requests. And I'm sure that they have a legitimate stand, and I'm sure that with this new addition of information that just, I found out yesterday, I guess, that England is going to let all European workers that they came already to stay, to have a visa, they have the right to stay there, which is incredible. So they honor, they come with honors. I think that the European Union should respect it. And just I want to remind everybody, even though the Article 50, the exit from Brexit, says that you have to finish all agreement within 2 years, there is a closure that say you can extend it. So nothing is a must. You can work if you want. And I'm sure that they're better off being a little flexible and trying to determine the parameter of the request that England makes. So you can consider it. Let me repeat that or rephrase it better. Once you deal with a clear state of mind from both sides, you guys will have a better understanding and a better future for all of us, because we all interdependent. This is our world. This is our community. Europe is our our marketplace, our playground, let's say, where entertainment, where the arts, and where we all love to come and share the most incredible moments in one life. So we want it to be beautiful, and we want England to keep flourishing and be a stronghold, because we need another big sister or big brother around, because this world as it's going right now, we're not sure where it's going. And one of great example we had is in last night debate, which America needs to choose between two candidates that accept playing like playgrounds. There was nothing there. So I want you to listen to this music first, and then we're going to go to the debate. Barbra Streisand, We love you. This is one of the most incredible ladies of the world. Guys, you have to give it to her. It's not that she's Jewish and she's proud of it. She is an actress. She is a lady. She is a singer. She's a writer. She's a player. She is a woman wonderland. My goodness gracious, to hold up to her torch, it's incredible. And we are just trying to follow suit in a little bit, you know, slowly but surely. Now, let's keep on going. We have the Brexit, I promised you. I'm thinking it's an incredible thing. England needs to be independent. She has too big of a wings to be under the European Union wings. And I second that. Okay, so I'll support them. I'll help them. And we make sure that there will be incredible international free market for them to play in. And European Union will have to play along because that's the way it goes. Now, we have a few more things that we need to talk about. The Trump and Hillary Clinton debate yesterday. Let's see. Let's listen if we have a segment from there.
It's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Because you'd be in jail.
Secretary Clinton. Hello. Hello.
You brag that you have sexually assaulted women. Do you understand that?
No, I didn't say that at all. I don't think you understood what was said. This was locker room talk. I'm not proud of it. I apologize to my family. I apologize to the American people. Certainly, I'm not proud of it. You know, when we have a world where you have ISIS chopping off heads, where you have, and frankly, drowning. If you look at Bill Clinton, far worse, minor words, and his was action. His was what he's done to women. There's never been anybody in the history of politics in this nation that's been so abusive to women.
What we all saw and heard on Friday was Donald talking about women, what he thinks about women, what he does to women. And he has said that the video doesn't represent who he is. But I think it's clear to anyone who heard it that it represents exactly who he is.
The thing that you should be apologizing for are the 33,000 emails that you deleted. If I win, I am going to instruct my attorney general to get a special prosecutor to look into your situation.
Not the other 15,000.
Please allow her to respond. She didn't talk while you talked.
Yes, that's true. I didn't.
Because you have nothing to say.
I didn't in the first debate, and I'm going to try not to in this debate because I'd like to get to the questions that the people have brought here tonight to talk to us about.
And get off this question.
Okay, Donald, I know you're into big diversion tonight, anything to avoid talking about your campaign and the way it's exploding and the way Republicans are leaving you. But let's
see
at
what
least
happens
focus
allow
on
her to
some
respond.
Of the
let's
issues.
See what I'd like to know, Anderson, why aren't you bringing up the emails? I'd like to know. Why aren't you
we
getting
brought up
to the
emails.
Bottom? No, it hasn't. It hasn't. And it hasn't been finished at all.
Ken Karpowitz has a question.
It's nice to one on three.
Good evening. Would either of you name one positive thing that you respect in one another?
I respect his children.
She doesn't quit, she doesn't give up.
All right, and we're back. Do you believe this? Do you believe this? He will throw her to jail. That's what he says publicly on debate. Now, let's remember who threw in jail the last one that wanted them. You know, there was a coup in Turkey and he sent everybody to jail. I thought that Hillary just missed a bit because it seems like he won that round. Like he will put her in jail and she should have telling that's the character of every dictator in the world. Pretense for him to say that he is available, you know, is able to throw somebody in jail just because of opposing him. It's ludicrous and dangerous. And we are back to that square. Are they for real? Now, I want to tell you something. Hillary was trying to explain the Middle East, and it was wonderful because I understood that we are not understood in the world. America needs to understand this better. And while saying that, we need to understand that it's really complicated. But when you are in the middle of the fire and you don't know what you're doing, please stay away and keep off. And, you know, last week I was asking, you know, Russia and America to take their long time fighting elsewhere. And I don't know what happened next, but I know that America decided to pull off from the agreement. But I want to ask everybody now that on the eve of Yom Kippur, please, let's start forgiving everybody else, because we cannot keep a grudge over years. I know there are a lot of victims everywhere. We know a lot of sacrifice everywhere. We have a very big duty to maintain in a robust world, and this attitude of the great countries in the world must be an example to us. And I'll give you a good example. Today, the court in Canada, democratic, beautiful country with outstanding people, with incredible spirit, just come to agreement, the court agreement with the police corp, which stated, I don't have still the audios, but maybe next week it is, because it brought me to tears. It was published today in the Israeli news. The court decided, the police department apologized before the women police women that their culture of sexual abusement was there, and they abuse women constantly, verbally, like, I don't know if it was physically, but there was some situation there. And they won a lawsuit, an official apology in tears of the Department of the Police. You know, women, we are trying to be strong and mighty as the men are, which we are not, because physically we are not the same. And we kept being, joked about constantly by the boys, and we know that. That locker room talks of Donald Trump, maybe it's everyday things in the world, and I'm saying in the world because boys will be boys everywhere in the world. It's not, it doesn't stop in the borders of any line. And if all jokes are right, and, you know, the man passed the remote control to the boy instead of his wife, we are clear that women lib did a very poor job so far. And the fact that in Canada we have a light that's saying, you know, we apologize for this culture. We want women to enjoy working with us and having sacrificing all this hard work and being abused in the middle, it's devastating. And I'm talking this in the context that we women can forgive a man like Trump for saying what all the boys are saying elsewhere, anywhere. And we are not a joke, and we are old enough to know what's on your mind constantly. But we need to understand that this is a reflection of the boys being in this world, fighting, deciding, enjoying it, and giving us a hard time being there. And this uproar in the world is a fight between boys that we women would like you to stop. And we want you to ask yourself if you can forgive yourself all those days that you spent fighting instead of building, destroying instead of building, bridges, making things better. And I'm not a pro-Hillary girl. I'm a Republican. And everybody knows that. I'm a very conservative woman who like her God, and Democratic Party doesn't play right in my side of, you know, the book on God. So what I'm saying is, it's not, I want women to be respected, not because we own it and we deserve it. It's because you guys have to start playing fair. And we are the majority in this world. We are 52% of the world population. And of course, there was a Arab Spring where you see that everything is going shambles. But we women don't have the luxury to send everything in shambles. Well, let me take it back. Those broken houses that you see everywhere, those, I can't believe I'm going that deep this Yom Kippur day, but I guess that this is the time. But think about all those divorcees. Why those divorces? Why those broken houses? Why those kids of ours need to live in one parent single home household? Why the men and women cannot hold it together anymore? And it's easy. You disrespect women. And it's known. It's a fact. You guys are all over. But it's not, forget it, the respect that you open the door, which is nice, by the way. And I like that. It's the fact of attention, but it's not attention. It's intention. Let me explain to you something that got into recent time only to find out this. Today, we have intentions. You see, when you do something, you can do it up front and personal, and you can do it with care. When you say handle with care, it means just take a moment, take a deep breath, and put it accordingly, right? That second, handle with care. Women, men, children, animals, butterflies, insects. Well, I don't know about insects. Let's not put them in the equation. Anything in this world, plants, the sea, the ocean, the environment, we have to handle with care. Everything needs to have an extra deep breath and say, this is the way it should be. This is the right way. Once you do it with intention, you have all the difference in the world. When you come home from work and you see a woman, she looks bad. Oh, my God. Because her kids drive her ragged. Trust me, if you see those videos that you can find on the tube now and find them on for 10 months old babies, when they run like crazy, you can't even imagine how bad they are sometimes. Not bad, I'm saying vivid, lovely, bad, like good bad. When you see a woman after a day of that, trust me, she just need a hug, but a hug with intention, not give me a kiss. You know, I remember those 60s movies. Hi, honey, I'm home. I don't listen to this anymore. For some reason, the women, the freedom of women, I'm calling the women leap off here because they really destroyed to all of us. What they did, they send us going to work, hard work, let's compete with the men kind of work. Then we come home, we have let's compete with the kids kind of work, and let's compete with the household chore kind of work, and then let's compete with the next day chores, because the children, trust me, they come with the list. And then what, the shopping, and then the grocery, and then the laundry. We become the slave, but free. You know, you're free, you know, to spend your own money, of course, but you're free to do everything you want under this condition. And the men, of course, the men, the gangs of the boys, when they get together, oh, they're beautiful. They don't just disturb the household, you know, because the men cannot pretend he's helping. then you have to have also the boys that's sitting, you know, on your couch disturbing your livelihood, because the only time that the man is back is after work, so you guys take over. And then, of course, forget, you know, parties is parties. Weekends are weekends. But we're talking every day. Every day kind of routine, that there is somebody around those men that make them behave differently. Of course, and then we have to be nasty. Then we have to be the beep, whatever. And then it's because it's going off because no intention, no caring. That one thing of look to another, and then we say, why I need all this in the world? At least I can free myself from one person that really upset me all the time because he's in right in my face, my partner, and doesn't help. And he has all the gangs coming over too. So at least I'm free to work like a slave, God forbid, you know, like work hard, take care of my children, do the thing, but that's it. At least, you know, I'm destroyed. And nobody tells me that I look bad because I was working so hard. Do you get this, guys? Do you get this, guys? Do you understand what we have to go and deal with? How many women in this condition? Look around. They're full of it. Because if you see Fox News every day, you see all those legs. You see legs. All those women sit up and are smart ladies. And you all see legs. I'm telling you, what are you selling, America? Legs? Because I'm so tired of seeing those legs because I ain't have those beautiful legs like theirs. No, I'm kidding. You know, you can't compete with them, but the truth of the matter, it's a symbolism that destroy the message. You're using them again under the pretense they're free women to talk. They have a wonderful feature, Fox News, to show their legs and their heels. Shame on you, guys. This is the eve of Yom Kippur, and I'm calling off Fox News to get off those legs picture because we are tired of them. Anyway, let's keep on going because I've been talking, and it's after Matthew, guys. After Matthew. America had a Matthew this weekend. And let me assure you, I had one thing going for you all this weekend. I've been praying like crazy. My TV was connected with, God bless you guys, Comcast to the Weather Channel. And I saw the Matthew going everywhere. I was praying to God to say, please. Once he started going close to Georgia, I was like all over it because Hilton Head and Bluffton, South Carolina, that's where I spent so many years there, and I love them, and I have so many friends, and I know the places. I help was one of the forces that came out to build the place, so I want to see it stay intact. And you see the school of the children, Hilton Head Prep, all filled with water. But the sign is all still, and I was praying. So I'm glad that it's over. I'm so glad it was over. But you see, life can change so fast. So get your act together. Be nice to your wife. Actually, apologize. Say I'm sorry. Just, guys, you need to apologize before us all to ask forgiveness. This Yom Kippur. Because you guys created such a mess in the world. And you, Russia and America, you're wonderful in fighting. Let's see how wonderful you are in making peace. So in that segment, let's listen to what we have in store.
Is this the video you just sent over?
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
I'm sure many of you have heard the claim that Jewish communities in Judea Samaria, the West Bank, are an obstacle to peace. I've always been perplexed by this notion, because no one would seriously claim that the nearly 2 million Arabs living inside Israel, that they're an obstacle to peace. That's because they aren't. On the contrary, Israel's diversity shows its openness and readiness for peace. Yet the Palestinian leadership actually demands a Palestinian state with one precondition: no Jews. There's a phrase for that. It's called ethnic cleansing. And this demand is outrageous. It's even more outrageous that the world doesn't find this outrageous. Some otherwise enlightened countries even promote this outrage. Ask yourself this: would you accept ethnic cleansing in your state, a territory without Jews, without Hispanics, without Blacks? Since when is bigotry a foundation for peace? At this moment, Jewish school children in Judea Samaria are playing in sandboxes with their friends. Does their presence make peace impossible? I don't think so. I think what makes peace impossible is intolerance of others. Societies that respect all people are the ones that pursue peace. Societies that demand ethnic cleansing don't pursue peace. I envision a Middle East where young Arabs and young Jews learn together, work together, live together, side by side, in peace. Our region needs more tolerance, not less. So the next time you hear someone say, "Jews can't live somewhere, let alone in their ancestral homeland," take a moment to think of the implications. Ethnic cleansing for peace is absurd. It's about time somebody said it. I just did.
All right, let's go back. All right, we are back. That was Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, the guy that worked so hard and is still being misunderstood. And obviously, this comment is not a reply for whatever comment came from State Department in regard to the 300 housing in Judea and Samaria area. I just want to make a clear sentence here, not sentence, argument. The world tell us not to build houses. Like they're saying, you cannot have a family in some place in the world because Jews are not allowed. That's what you're telling us. You're telling us that the Jews are not welcome to be on disputed territories because you guys in the world, the free world, the wherever you decide to be, those, you know, high on the top decide to manage the world, you think that you have the right to kick Jewish people from houses that they've been owning for 20 years because you just have a claim. You send your big money with a big lawyer on to a government or to policymakers that don't know the law. And let me tell you about the law, because I've been thankfully, gratefully educated in the law system in America, which in America is very clear. When you have a disputed territory, it means that it doesn't belong to none, right? It means that it does not belong to anybody. Now, if a building was built on top and there is some compensation to be to the previous owner that was on the land that the, you know, my ancestor evacuated and then they settled in, then my settler came in and you want to evacuate it for the settler that came after, you're confused enough? No, I didn't do it on purpose. I'm just saying. Just imagine, you go to Texas and said, okay, evacuate those houses, clean it, and destroy them because they're sitting on Indian land. No, I'm sorry, Mexico. Mexico land. All right? Or you go to any places in America and decided, oh, I got the title on the land because I am Indian, American Indian. You guys understand how ludicrous you're becoming to be? Or you think that we all running stupid? Now, this children, and I'm calling children in the government of Israel because I meet them. Yesterday I was with a very, very young child. She is like probably in her 30s. And she is a member of Knesset, very smart, bright, but she doesn't know history. And she has no clue how wrong everything is. For us to have the justice, the High Court of Justice telling people to destroy, the police, to destroy houses that it's not even in their jurisdiction. You cannot put an Israeli law on a disputed territory that it's not even under sovereignty of the, you know, yet of the state of Israel. So we have the left wing of the Israeli coming and trying to play ball with us on no man's land. And if you go on no man's land, let's talk about Judea and Samaria. You know, it's Judea. It means that that's the name of that place from biblical time. Remind you something? And I want to tell you another thing while we're at. You know, tomorrow, Kiev, it's Yom Kippur. Do you know what we do in Yom Kippur? We pray. We pray to God to forgive us. We pray to God to forgive us. And we need to be as close as God as possible, because God Almighty knows how many shortcomings we have every year, right? Now, we all ask the world for forgiveness, and I ask you for forgiveness because I love you, and I know sometimes I'm harsh, but I'm truthful, okay? I'm truthful. That's something you have to count on. But you guys decided that my old holy site, the one, the Temple Mount, where there is, you know, there is no more, because they excavated all the remains, almost, of the whole first and second temple that, you know, belongs also to the Christian, because the Judeo-Christian tradition come from the Jewish tradition, right? And now you're talking about Temple Mount, and one day a month, maybe it's good, but one day a year, I cannot go there and pray. I am not allowed to pray in my holiest site, written by the Bible of 2,000 years, acknowledged by billion of Christian. All are millions of Jews, of course. But you guys decide the Temple Mount is, by all means, in United Nations, they decided it doesn't have nothing to do with the Judeo-Christian religion. Do you get it? How twisted you guys can be? So I'm calling here to the world, to the Muslim, too. It's a big site, 40 acres. You don't need the grounds around. The grounds behind the Western Wall can be perceived as a part of, you know, there are trees there, part of our area, just to join in and pray. We don't ask much. And yes, I would like to build my holy temple, that's for sure. Now, if me worshiping God, me praying for God, disturb your mighty life, I don't know, it will be a question to be ridiculously asked, because my prayer, we can always be for you too, for a better world. I don't know. I'm just saying, guys, snap out of it. It's over. All right? We all want connected world. Just join in. Let's think how we make it better. Russia, America, Yemen. You guys, the Yemen, the bomb, they went to, you know, to bury some guys, and they buried 100 more just because they bombed the place. And this is a stand-up for America after, you know, from the Saudis and the Syrian and the Iranian. Guys, do you know how many law you guys obstruct? How many justice system don't work here? I don't understand. And then you ask me 300 units of housing in Shiloh. Shiloh is a site that for 400 years we had the temple, okay? So let's start talking about real thing, basic. Shiloh belongs to the Jewish people biblically. You don't. You're getting mad about that. Well, I want to build everywhere. Okay, I want to build all over the world. That's my, you know, art. We love to build. So you tell us not to? Why? What kind of a free world is it, after all? Guys, I think that we're running out of time, and I want to leave you with music. But before we go, I must tell you something. There is a God, a almighty God, that can bring the sky above you to hold still, or it can make all this, or it can go crazy and with tornado and whatever you can imagine. The heart and the sky, the sea and the air you breathe, all belongs to this universe that was created for mankind. We are the mankind who walk on this planet. We have to understand that there is a God that makes it work. And He is watching us. And He is watching us as... Oh, I'm sorry I didn't bring Bette Midler song next time. He is watching us, God, and we need to be, you know, worthy of the soul He gave us. Let's do it. Let's be, you know, this year is the Jewish year 5777. Seven mean completion. Let it be life. Let it be like, you know, like the best life you can ever. Let's try it for 1 year, okay? Let's take a break. Recruit. Everybody go back to your spaces, okay? Let's get to and restart the world. 1 year. Give us a break. And let's hope that you give us a break as women too. Helping and everything. Take your share of the world. Stop chasing other girls. That's what I was saying. No, really. And let's get this world back to its feet. And may we win this. May we make it better. I wish you all the blessing in the world. Gemar Chatima Tova means that the signature will be good for your life this year to come. It will be life, and God will bless you with all what you want. But trust in Him, He'll give you the best. Do what you have to do. I'm saluting you. I'm thanking Doug Newsom, the Donald Newsom, for a wonderful, excellent year. And really looking forward to incredible new beginning. God bless you all from Israel, the Holy Land. Blessing upon all of you guys. Ciao, ciao.